Pramudataha.
Very pleased.
Puruhu.
Puru.
Apratyagrinat.
Accepted.
Jadam.
The old age and invalidity.
Pituhu.
Of his father.
Saha.
That father.
Yayati.
Api.
Also.
Tadvayasa.
By the youth of his son.
Kaman.
All desires.
Yathavat.
As required.
Ajujushe.
Satisfied.
Nirpa.
O Maharaj Pariksit.
So translation, Shukadeva Goswami said, in this way, O Maharaj Pariksit, the son named Puruva was very pleased to accept the old age of his father Yayati, who took the youth of his son and enjoyed this material world as he required. So you can repeat, Shukadeva Goswami said, in this way,
O Maharaj
Pariksit,
the son named Puru
was very pleased to accept
the old age of his father Yayati,
who took the youth of his son
and enjoyed this material world as he required.
So there's no purport to this text, no more the next text, no text after that. For the next day after that, and finally we get to purport.
So, we'll continue reading.
Sapta dvipa pati samyat aditri vat palayam vajakho yatopa josham vishayan jujushevya atendriyaha.
There the king Yayati became the ruler of the entire world, consisting of seven islands, and ruled the citizens exactly like a father. Because he had taken the youth of his son, his senses were unimpaired, and he enjoyed as much material happiness as he desired.
Text 47. Devyanyapi anutinam manuvadeva vastubhihi priyasa paramam pritim vaha priyasi radha.
In secluded places, engaging her mind, words, body, and various paraphernalia, Devyani, the dear wife of Maharaj Yayati, always brought her husband the greatest possible transcendental bliss.
Text 48. Ayajan yajya purusham kratu birbu ridakshinaha
dakshinai
sarva devam mayam devam sarva vedam mayam harim.
King Yayati performed various sacrifices in which he offered abundant gifts to the Brahmanas to satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari, who is the reservoir of all the demigods and the object of all Vedic knowledge. Finally, text 49.
Yasmin nidam virachittam vyom niva jaladavalaki naneva bhakti navati svapnamaya manoratana.
The Supreme Lord Vasudeva, who created the cosmic manifestation, exhibits himself as all-pervading like the sky that holds clouds. And when the creation is annihilated, everything enters into the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, and varieties are no longer manifested.
So purport, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
As stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter, text 19, Mohunam janmanam mante gyanavamam prapadyate vasudeva sarvam iti samatma sutulabha.
After many births and deaths, He who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is one with the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everything is in him in the beginning and at the end. All manifestations enter into him. He is situated in everyone's heart, Savasya Chaham Bhadi, son of his Taha. And from him, everything is emanated, Jamadhyasya Yataha. All material manifestations, however, are temporary. The word svapna means dreams. Maya means illusion, and manavulata means mental creations. Dreams, illusions, and mental creations are temporary. Similarly, all material creation is temporary, but Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the eternal, absolute truth. So, Om Gadan Timadanda Shah, Gadan Jana Shlakaya Chakshuru Meditam Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, it's interesting to note here that Yayati is not just like, as we say in America, pigging it out with his wife. You know, so in other words, it's not an no holds barred experience where he's just like getting drunk and having, you know, sex with his wife and everything like that. This is something that's Vedic. Of course, the word Vedic means knowledge. And of course, Vedanta means the end of knowledge. So he was acting with the intention of becoming a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That was his intention. And he realized that he had certain needs, because had he not fulfilled that particular need in a Vedic way, which is made very clear here in several verses, like secluded place and engaging her mind, words and bodies and various preferences. Devyani, the dear wife of Maharajyati, always brought her husband the greatest possible transcendental bliss. In other words, it's not transcendental bliss with sex life with his wife. That wasn't the point. But she was engaging, and as it's described, the wife's business is basically controlling the senses of the husband. This is interesting. And she's like the guardian of the fortress. There's other descriptions in the Bhagavad Gita about that. Not Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam about that. So in other words, she was assisting her husband in becoming Krishna conscious by allowing him to fulfill, as described in the previous verse, as he required in verse 45, enjoy this material world as he required. In other words, as he required for spiritual advancement. So no one should criticize Yayati. In fact, even his relationship with Sarmishta, even though Shukracharya criticized him for that, and basically he considered himself like a goat. In the next part of the Bhagavatam, we're going to find him describing himself like a goat, a male goat, or the she-goat. But still, it was dharmic. His relationship with Sarmishta was dharmic. Because, he had great sons from that particular relationship, and he was fulfilling his dharma by giving his wife, even though he wasn't directly married to Sarmishta, but de facto means he was married to Sarmishta. He was responsible for her welfare, so he was responsible to give her children. That's a husband's duty. So, you know, everything here was like on the up and up, with Devyani, Sarmishta, and Yayati. Nothing was bad, although Shukracharya didn't appreciate it very much, Devyani didn't appreciate it very much when Sarmishta had a relationship with Yayati. But still, it's on the up and up. And so, one has to understand, one lesson we can understand from this, one has to understand that one has certain needs in this material world. And even though, as it's described in the last verse, everything's temporary, still, in order to keep yourself stable in Krishna consciousness, you have to be able to understand what your needs are and make some strategy for fulfilling those needs. It's practical. People should be introspective and not think that they're more advanced than they actually are. Because had King Yayati, let's take this scenario, let's imagine a scenario, that King Yayati, all right, let's say he didn't regain his youth. He just like remained as an old buzzard after he was cursed by Shukracharya. Let's take that as a hypothetical. He would have been, you know, completely unfulfilled, frustrated, and also thinking of young girls, but not able to do anything about it, basically. You know, he needed that sort of relationship right then to progress in spiritual life. And as Prabhupada mentions in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Gajendra Mokshana, where Gajendra is fighting the crocodile in the water, and Gajendra is losing the fight because Gajendra is not an animal of the water. Prabhupada mentions that people should be situated understanding their particular needs. Of course, that's also called the psycho-physical nature. And one of the guru's duties is to facilitate the devotees in understanding their psycho-physical natures and what they need to be stable and steady in Krishna consciousness. And of course, that doesn't only refer to the ashramas, you know, brahmachari, prastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, but also refers to the varnas. It's everyone should be engaged in doing something they like to do. They feel at home with doing it, whether that means fixing cars for Krishna, or whether it means working a job and supporting your family, whatever it means, because as Krishna states that everyone can become perfect doing their duty. And no one should try to do someone else's duty, because if you do someone else's duty, you're not fulfilling your psychophysical needs. That's the whole point. Even if you can do someone else's duty perfectly, you're not fulfilling your needs, and you're not going to be happy. You're going to be unstable in bhakti yoga. So this is one point here. Of course, the point Prabhupada makes in the last verse and purport here, and the Krishna makes too, is about the temporary nature of this material world. At the same time, one is fulfilling their psychophysical needs and executing devotional service, keep in mind that everything's temporary. Again and again, I'm even referring to the whole cosmic manifestation. Again and again, this cosmic manifestation is manifest, and sometimes it's not manifest. And when it's not manifest, all the varieties become, let's say, finished. And there's the pradhan. Pradhan means the unmanifest stage of the material nature. The material nature continues to exist, but as something without variety, the potential, the pradhan. Pradhan is actually a substance. And that pradhan is something like silly putty. If any of you played with silly putty when you were young, or clay, or Play-Doh. Of course, Play-Doh is better because it's not toxic. Whereas I think silly putty, if you eat it, you probably have some problems. But anyway, so Play-Doh with a different color. You know, when you take it out, it's like a cylindrical container. It's just nothing. It's just like blob. And that's basically the pradhan. And then when the Supreme Lord glances at the pradhan becomes variegated. And all, everything becomes manifest. And when the Supreme Lord breathes in, all the little universes come in within his body. Anyway, so in other words, it's temporary. And this topic of the temporary nature of the material world is one of the important topics in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, there's five topics in the Bhagavad Gita, and that's one of the most important topics to convince you. I mean, even when time is not directly mentioned in the verse, you have it mentioned in terms of reincarnation, the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Dehino, Smenyatadehe, Koma, Rama, Javadam, Jara, Tatadeham, Doris, Pratir, Deiris, Tatra, Namunyati. I mean, that's time right there, isn't it? The embodied soul passes from boyhood, sorry, girlhood, to youth. We have to be evil now, they. Ithood. Anyway, embodied soul passes from boyhood to youth to old age, one should not become bewildered by such a change. So that, you know, that's a time factor right there. The jayate rite bhagadachan. For the soul, there's nothing birth nor death. So there's indirect references to the time factor. And in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, there's direct references, which we're going to talk about in a second, which is one of the most direct references in the Bhagavad Gita is in the 11th chapter. And the 11th chapter deals with the universal form, which is a manifestation in one sense of time, in which Arjuna perceives the ultimate destination of all the soldiers in the battle of Kurukshetra, at least, except for himself and the other Pandavas and a few other people. And so there's an interesting verse here in this regard where Krishna directly mentions that he is time. Of course, in one sense, yes, I understand time is the same as Krishna and also different simultaneously. You know, we have this nice Achincha Veda Tattva philosophy. So it's not that time is the same as Krishna in the spiritual world, and absolutely the same as Krishna in the spiritual world, dancing with the gopis and everything else like that. In fact, in the spiritual world, one of the things that one will notice when one goes, that's interesting, when one goes there, because I'm using a time-bound expression, is that there's no material time there. Although there's a progression of pastimes, but you don't have the time that destroys, as we're going to be reading about here, time that destroys, tears everything apart. Of course, we have that principle in science called entropy. Some of you may have heard about it. Entropy means that things tend to become less complex in time, to fall apart in time. And of course, if you take that principle of entropy and utilize that scientific principle, you can pretty much defeat those who are evolutionists, you know, believe in the theory of things got more and more complex. Because generally, I mean, if you look at things, like if you have any of you have like an electronic device, like a computer or a mobile phone, then after some time, there's something called planned obsolescence, or whether it's planned or not, it still becomes obsolete. And it's a problem. I mean, actually, nowadays, of course, they make the mobile phones so you can't replace the batteries. In the early days of mobile phones, isn't it? They had a battery you could just swap out and then, you know, save some money. And now you've got to replace it every year and a half because of the damn battery. And then if you want to send it to be repaired, it costs $200 to replace the battery. And so the material world, of course, has that planned obsolescence too. So in any case, things tend to fall apart. Things tend to become less complex. You know, and everyone wants to buy a new car. Sometimes you're satisfied. I mean, I was just talking to someone last night that her son has a 2015 Camry, and he's really upset. He needs a car, and he's putting pressure on his mother to buy a new car that will cost $500 a month, you know, payments. So, because it's 3 years old. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, anyway, and another thing is, yes, actually also, we have a throwaway culture in the West. That, you know, I was reading one comment, the problem like that you Westerners just throw things away, but in India we would repair it. And in India, actually, even in Govardhan, if you go to different places, they have repair shops that would repair, my word, they repair things you could never believe would be repaired. Mm-hmm. And it's not even sophisticated guys in the repair shops, you know, just a guy with a soldering iron and a good eye. So, anyway, so that's the material energy and entropy. So let's read this verse. Text 32 in the 11th chapter, for those of you who have the iPads, iPad, whatever. So, Sri Bhagavan Vacha Kalosmi, there's Kala. Look at Seya, Do, Lukan, Samana, Hart, Miha, Pravritaha, Vatei, Vitwam, Na, Vajish, Yamiti, Sarve, Ye, Vashtita, Prayan, Mikhe, Shu, Yodaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come here to destroy all people." Wow. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on those sides would be slain. And Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, and this is a very important purport for describing the time factor. Although Arjuna knew that Krishna was his friend and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was puzzled by the various forms exhibited by Krishna. Therefore, he asked further about the actual mission of this devastating force. It is written in the Vedas that the Supreme Truth destroys everything, even the Brahmanas. As stated in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.25, Yasya Brahma Cha Shatram Cha Ube Bhava Bhavata Odanaha Mityu Yasya Vashe Chana Kaida Veda Yatra Saha. Eventually, all the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and everyone else are devoured like a meal by the Supreme. I mean, just try to picture non-vegetarian form of the Lord. This form of the Supreme Lord is the all-devouring giant, and here Krishna presents himself in that form of all-devouring time. Except for a few Pandavas, everyone who was present in the battlefield would be devoured by him. Arjuna was not in favor of the fight, and he thought it was better not to fight, therefore there would be no frustration. In reply, the Lord said, was saying, that even if he did not fight, every one of them would be destroyed, for that was his plan. If Arjuna stopped fighting, they would die in another way. Death could not be checked even if he did not fight. In fact, they were already dead. And remember, that refers to all of us. Because ultimately, Arjuna and the other Pandavas, they marched to the north after Krishna had left the planet, and Arjuna felt his great depression that Krishna had left the planet, and they dropped it. Down, drop their bodies one by one. That's a fact. I mean, actually, it's a fact that Arjuna, it's even in Arjuna's described it, he changes his body. And that's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, many, many lives I pass, I can remember all of them, but you cannot, Arjuna. In other words, the Prabhupada said that's because Arjuna changes his body. He's a pure devotee, but he's given a body within this world to execute his service, and that's not his eternal body. I mean, pure devotees, generally, they come down and they accept a body. And we say the body is spiritual because it's used in Krishna service, but it's not their eternal body. It's not that Prabhupada in the spiritual world looks like he looked like in this world. He has a spiritual, eternal relationship with Krishna in one of the five different rasas. So everyone is killed. Everyone is devoured by this universal form. Death could not be checked, even if he did not fight. In fact, they were already dead. Time is destruction. And all manifestations are to be vanquished by the desire of the Supreme Lord. That is the law of nature. So that's something for us to remember. Of course, as we know, there is one thing that's not destroyed by time. Does anyone know what that is? The soul. The one thing that we have that's not destroyed besides the soul. Consciousness, but what does Krishna say in the Gita about Swapam Apyasha Dharmasha? Try the day. Our devotional service. I mean, obviously, the direct physical results of our devotional service are destroyed in time. I mean, for example, we built the temple then needs to be renovated, like that. One day, this building will not exist anymore. I hate to tell you that. And even though TLVP, they're planning for how many years? Like 1,000 years or something like that? One day it will not exist anymore. Even the temple in Jagannath Puri, they had to rebuild several times, So the direct physical results of our devotional service won't continue to exist. But the service, the bhakti, the love that we gave to Krishna, is eternal. And also, the fame of a devotee is eternal. I mean, maybe not in this world, but at least the appreciation from the Vaishnavas and the understanding of what we did in Krishna's mind and the other devotees' mind, that's eternal. So these things we should concentrate on. And the stuff that's non-eternal, just try to detach from it, you know, because ultimately, you know, whether it's the age of your body, whether it's your family members, whether it's your little children, you're trying to hold on to their babyhood, like my mother, you know, holding on to my babyhood. Isn't it? She's just remembering my little baby. Of course, that's advantageous for me, from a different angle of vision. But still, just remember that. So one final thing I wanted to close, actually, the class if we have time, is a devotee who actually wanted to directly see this devastation, besides Arjuna, who directly saw this. This is the story of Markandeya Rishi from the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Markandeya Rishi was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. In fact, he was so great that when Cupid, the demigods, approached him, he wasn't at all attracted. And he was able to please the sages, Naranaya and Rishis. And they asked him, do you want a benediction? And he basically said, you know, I want to see your Maya, you know, like your time factor. And they were thinking, actually it's described they were looking at him ruefully, and they were thinking, why does he want to see that? You know, it's like going to Krishna in Vrindavan, basically going to Vrindavan, going around Govardhan and praying to Govardhan, let me see your time factor. Let me see your Maya. Huh. Anyway, so he's a great devotee, I'm not criticizing him, but somehow or other he wanted to see it, he was curious. And Krishna said, okay. So one day he was meditating in his ashram, and as he was meditating in his ashram, there was the flood of devastation. And there was this, like an ocean with all Timon gillifish and everything. He was just floating. Somehow or other he didn't drown. But he was just floating in this ocean, you know, for eons. Not just like, you know, a short swim. But for eons. Eons means like yugas and kalpas. And it's described, he existed for several manvantaras. Can you imagine being subjected to that difficulty? I mean, what a lesson to learn about the time factor. And so he's floating, and suffering like anything. And then eventually he sees, as he's floating in the water of devastation, he sees an island, there's a banyan tree, and there's a leaf of the banyan tree, and there's a little baby on one of the leaves. And yeah, he makes his way to the shore, and the baby breathes in. Baby's sucking his toe. The reason he's sucking his toe is the baby is Krishna, and Krishna likes to enjoy the taste of his lotus feet. What is the taste of Krishna's lotus feet? The taste of the lotus, Krishna's lotus feet is service. You know, don't think of it in a mundane way. We have time. Don't think of it in a mundane way that, you know, just the foot. But just like Krishna appears as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to taste service, that's what the feet mean. It's like, I was looking at the deities, or taking darshan, I was taking darshan of the deity, the blessings of the deities, this morning, and I was looking at Krishna's feet. You know, sometimes I jump up to Krishna's face, being a sahaja. Anyway, I jump up to Krishna's face, and when I see Krishna's face, I just think how beautiful. Sure, his face is beautiful. But when I see Krishna's feet, what do I think?
Surrender.
What do you think?
Surrender.
Serve, let me serve. Yeah, I mean, it was amazing, the difference. The psychologically, emotional response that I had from seeing Krishna's feet. I mean, it's just amazing. When I see Krishna's face, I think I'm the enjoyer of Krishna's beauty. Mm-hmm. And when I see Krishna's feet, I think I'm a servant. I mean, it's really true, you know, that we're supposed to meditate on Krishna's feet. You know, I was always wondering, why is that, you know, why is this foot stuff? But it really evokes a mood of service when you look at the feet, doesn't it? Anyway, so Krishna was sucking his own foot. His toe, not the whole foot, but He was sucking his toe, and Chris Christian wants to enjoy a service to himself. Really, that's what it indicates. Anyway, so Markandeya Rishi sees this, he rushes up to embrace this little kid. The little kid breathes in. And all of a sudden, Markandeya Rishi finds himself in the same ashram that he was living in before. He goes, what the heck is going on here? And then the little boy breathes out, and he floats around, and then he comes back. Eventually, he ends up at the same ashram. Anyway, so he was learning about the temporary nature of this material world, which is an interesting lesson, but you know, I don't want to take like eons and eons of yuga cycles to learn about the temporary nature of the material world. Krishna's teaching us. I mean, just like yesterday, I was seated. Anyway, I was having jury duty, and I was looking at my phone, not in the courtroom, but anyway, looking at my phone, and one of my disciples said, well, in the last 2 weeks, my mother passed away, and my aunt passed away. What's happening? And of course, I was empathic. I wouldn't say, you know, that's the nature of this world, lady, you know. But I said, you know, eventually, you know, after being empathic, I said, that's the nature of the world. That, you know, these things happen. And you have to expect that. You know, people are thinking, why did it happen now? Like sometimes people say, let's say someone died in a car accident, why such an unfortunate way of dying? Well, what's a fortunate way of dying?
Yeah.
You know, you want to prolong death? I mean, it's just like, it's fortunate if you're remembering Krishna. And as one devotee reminded me about something I said in class the other day, while we're dying, we could be thinking, oh goody, I get a chance to see Krishna soon. And with that positive attitude, you know, sometimes people say, well, I want to think of Krishna. Yes, you do want to think of Krishna. But it should be positive that yes, I get a chance to see Krishna to serve. And the most lamentable thing is if we lose our ability to serve from one lifetime to another. That's lamentable. So if we can serve, then we're not worried about the time factor. So, on that happy note, any questions or comments? We have about 10 seconds. Yeah. Who?
Okay. Now, I know he's being taught something by suffering through the ocean like that many lifetimes.
Yeah.
Just do it to me for a couple of hours and say, okay, you win. I get it. Why so
long? He asked for it. you get what you asked for.
Wow.
What?
Because he came right back.
Yeah, he came right back, yeah.
So was it how long?
It was a long time.